Telling the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. As many of you know, or maybe all of you know by this point, the Supreme Court the other day heard arguments, oral arguments, in a case in which they could decide or they could rule that gay marriage to be a constitutional right. There's been a lot of talk about this. There's been a lot of anticipation of this this event taking place where they would hear these oral arguments. I think the oral arguments went about 2 hours, maybe even a little bit longer than that, which was unusual for the court. They normally don't hear that long of arguments, but they did in this case. And if that's any indication of the seriousness of it, that would be one thing. But I think that our listeners, especially those that have and tuned into this broadcast for any length of time, realize that this is a very, very serious issue that is before the court right now. I wanted to get some perspective from some folks that have been following issues like this for a long period of time, and I thought, who better to do that with than Denny Burke? Denny's been with me on the broadcast before. We talked about his book that is published by Crossway. The title of that book is What is the Meaning of Sex? And, of course, that enters in somewhat to this debate, of course. And so we talked about that issue. You can find that interview that I did with Denny on that subject out on my sermon audio page. That's www.sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth. And you can listen to our discussion specifically about that book. Let me tell you about Denny a little bit. Denny is a professor of biblical studies at Boyce College, the undergraduate arm of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. And he also blogs, has a very interesting blog, I should say. I read a lot of blogs, and this is one of the more interesting ones out there. But he blogs out at DennyBurke.com. That's www.DennyBurke.com. And you can go out there to read some of his interesting posts. We're going to be talking about one of them today. The post that we're going to be talking about is entitled Brief Reflections on the Oral Arguments, and that's where you find it out at DennyBurke.com. Denny, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Denny, you say in the beginning of your blog post that you expressed what I was feeling exactly. You know, that I thought that this was pretty much a foregone conclusion. It was just a formality that was taking place. When we see the trends and the way things are going in our country and so forth, we've seen other decisions come out of this court that didn't give us a whole lot of hope that they would come to the right conclusion on this issue. So I was kind of under the thinking that it was going to be a foregone conclusion. However, some of the statements that were made got me wondering, you know, what's going on here? Why don't you set the stage for us a little bit about what you wrote about and what took place at the court?
Well, you know, the court was considering two questions on Tuesday. They were essentially trying to figure out if there was a 14th Amendment violation in prohibiting the same-sex marriage bans that are on the books in various different states. And so they were answering the question, does the 14th Amendment require states to issue marriage licenses to two people of the same sex? That was the first question. And then they were answering the question, does the 14th Amendment require states to recognize same-sex marriages licensed in other states? So those, technically, that's what they were looking at. And so they heard sets of oral arguments on those topics. And I did think that it would be a foregone conclusion, mainly because I'm familiar with the precedents that are coming into this case. And in 2003, the Supreme Court ruled unconstitutional all laws against sodomy. It was a famous case in 2003, known as the Windsor case, and the Supreme Court ruled that, you know, that those laws are unconstitutional. And the way that it was worded, the implications were leading in right to what we're seeing today. And Justice Scalia, in his opinion, back in 2003, said as much. And Justice Kennedy wrote that opinion in 2003 in the Windsor case. And then, of course, the one we all know of is, did I say the Windsor case? I meant the Lawrence case.
Mm-hmm.
2003 was the Lawrence case. 2013 was the Windsor case that we all remember. And Justice Kennedy wrote the opinion for that one, too. And, of course, that one went against traditional marriage as well. And so when you're coming into this one, you're looking at a court that looks ideologically divided with Kennedy at the middle again. And in fact, some people were wondering, you know, whether or not Roberts would be, sort of going against the traditional view on marriage. But once they got into the oral arguments, it sort of threw things up into the air. It seemed that Roberts was solidly with the conservatives, but Kennedy wasn't decidedly with the liberals.
Mm.
And he asked some questions that made people think, well, maybe he hasn't made up his mind yet. And so a lot of observers are thinking, you know, perhaps Kennedy is undecided on this, and maybe it's not a foregone conclusion. So that thought is out there. I would like to allow myself to be hopeful about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not hopeful about it. I think, you know, Kennedy's remarks may have been a bit of a head fake. I think it's going to be very difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it'd be very difficult for him to roll back and walk back what he argued in those previous two cases, and especially in the Windsor decision where he was so adamant about opposition to same-sex marriage being rooted only in animus.
Mm.
That one's going to be hard to walk back, in my view, in this next opinion. But I hope I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. You talk about precedent. I can't get over the fact, and Kennedy brought this out during the oral argument where he used the word millennia. Or millennial,
yeah.
I think millennia. That's what. And he had mentioned that, you know, how can we go against this tremendous weight of precedent leading up to this point? Why should 9 people now decide that, you know, all these people down through thousands of years in all different cultures all across the world, you know, that they have decided that marriage is between a man and a woman? Why should 9 people now change that decision? When they use terminology like that, I say, amen. I mean, how can you possibly now rule differently having made that statement? But I guess this is possible, right?
Yeah, well, you know what struck me about that, Kevin, was I was just thinking about Kennedy making that statement, millennia, and just recognizing that this really does constitute a fundamental change to the meaning of marriage.
Hmm.
And it does seem like this is the first time he's kind of acknowledged that, and I just wonder, how could he not have been thinking about that before now?
Mm-hmm.
How could that not have been weighing on his internal deliberations as he was making the other two decisions, the other two opinions that he wrote?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if he's just coming to this now, better late than never, and I hope he rules in the right way. I think at the end of the day, none of us really knows. I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it goes the right way, but I have this sneaking suspicion he's going to come back and stay consistent with his previous decisions.
Mm-hmm. You had listed on your blog post as well a conversation between Ryan Anderson and Bill Bennett on Bill Bennett's radio program. And Ryan Anderson, of course, has been the champion of this issue all along and has done such a great job. But he was pretty optimistic because of these statements that were made and, you know, talked about how right in the very beginning, the opening statements that were made asking about what you just alluded to, that saying to the plaintiffs that they were basically not trying to join the institution of marriage, but they were trying to change it completely, transform it. This type of terminology being used by them. Again, you would think that when they're talking that way, it would be, you know, almost impossible to then rule against it when you yourself are acknowledging that that's part of the equation.
Yeah, you would think so. And I'll just mention, you know, Ryan Anderson's remarks about this. He was more optimistic, but he would not make a prediction still.
Yeah.
So he was, in other words, he thought it was a foregone conclusion, but Kennedy's remarks made him think, well, it's not a foregone conclusion, which is not that different from where I am. Mm-hmm. I don't know yet what it's going to be. But the prospects are brighter than they were before the arguments.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if, since there was absolutely no light before, anything is brighter.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I think that's what we have. But you know, I think that that's right. I think that one of the heartening things about the discussion this time was that the justices really did try to talk about marriage in its meaning. In other words, this has a social meaning, it has a philosophical meaning, it has a history. And framing it in terms of what the meaning of marriage is, what the purpose of marriage is something that a lot of judges have been unwilling to do. It's been totally framed as a rights issue,
mm-hmm.
and not in terms of a definitional issue of marriage itself. And that reflects the two different perspectives on this question, because the proponents of gay marriage only want this to be about rights.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want people contemplating what's the meaning of marriage historically been. What has it been in our laws and in our traditions, and what's its connection to childbearing? The proponents of gay marriage don't want people thinking about that. That's not the terrain that they want this argument to unfold on. It's the opponents of gay marriage that have been pushing, what is the meaning of marriage? What is its fundamental nature? And so Ryan Anderson and Sharif Gurgis and Robbie George, that's what they were trying to push in their book. And up until now, so much of the discussion in these courts that have ruled in favor of gay marriage, they've just been ignoring that question or not dealing with it adequately at all. And so one of the encouraging things was that the conservative justices did push that issue this time. And even Stephen Breyer asked, I think it may have been sort of a devil's advocate type questions, but he even pushed some questions having to do with the meaning of marriage. So that was a very positive development. I hope it's indicative of where they might rule, but we'll see. I think Brian's decidedly on the liberal half. I think mm-hmm. the only potential swing is Kennedy. That's what we're waiting to see.
Mm-hmm. You pointed out something in your post that I didn't hear many people zero in on quite as much, but it was the, you said it, let me read it right off your blog here. It says it this way: there was one exchange that sent a chill down my spine. President Obama's lawyer acknowledged that religious organizations would have their tax-exempt status challenged if the Supreme Court declares a right to same-sex marriage. Explain what was said and why what was said is so chilling.
Well, you had this exchange between Justice Alito and Solicitor General Varelli, who is the lawyer for the Obama administration. And essentially, Justice Alito had asked the Solicitor General if a religious school, a religious university, could lose their tax-exempt status if they refused to recognize gay marriage. So you have to imagine the world now has changed. Let's say that they declare a constitutional right to gay marriage. What happens to those schools that receive federal funding, either through Pell Grants, Stafford loans, whatever? They receive federal funding. What happens to those schools in terms of their tax-exempt status if all of a sudden they have to start paying taxes like everybody else? And they don't recognize gay marriage. So, say in student housing, a Christian school doesn't allow, gay partners to live together,
mm-hmm.
right? Just like they wouldn't allow any unmarried couple to live together. What if they don't allow gay partners to live together?
Mm-hmm.
What would the federal government do about that if there's a constitutional right to gay marriage? And the Solicitor General, you know, admitted that's going to be a problem. He says, He says, I don't think I can answer that question without knowing more specifics, but it's certainly going to be an issue. I don't deny that. I don't deny that, Justice Alito. It is going to be an issue, which means he is tipping his hand and saying the next, once we get this declared a constitutional right, we are going to make all these nonprofits conform to this new definition. And if they don't, they get their tax exempt status is at issue. And maybe other federal dollars that flow to them are at issue. And I'm just telling you, that would be calamitous for so many of these schools, because a lot of schools, Christian schools in particular, operate pretty close to the margin. If all of a sudden they, for instance, have to start paying property tax on a piece of property that's worth millions and millions of dollars,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have to fold up shop and quit. Mm-hmm. I mean, they won't be able to do that. So what I'm saying is that the new definition is going to have implications that we've barely begun to think about, but that Justice Alito was pressing the Solicitor General on. And the people that are paying attention know the religious liberty implications of this and know that Christian organizations and Christian individuals are going to have difficulties if gay marriage is declared a constitutional right.
Mm-hmm. I think Ryan Anderson had said as well that he thought that the response you would have expected from that lawyer was, oh, no, you know, we're not thinking about that at all. You know, no, we wouldn't dare. We protect that or whatever. Some sort of statement that wouldn't tip his hand. But there seemed to be, they were attributing it to a moment of candor, maybe even a slip of some sort, where he goes ahead and says this, now tipping the hand of this is where we're going, which we've been saying for a long time that this isn't just about really two people being married. There's much more at stake here. There's much broader ramifications than just that one act, right?
Oh, that's exactly right. And it just Christians and honestly secular people haven't really begun to think about what the implications of this are going to be, because people haven't thought about the ripple effects of this and how it's going to intersect people's daily lives. And it will be that way for many Christians. And so, you know, we're just going to have to end up taking our lumps on this, I'm afraid. I just wonder how much people realize this is going to change our national life.
Mm-hmm.
If this is made a constitutional right.
You mentioned about tax exempt status being taken away. That's one thing. Obviously, that may actually destroy the livelihood of many people and their ability to get a Christian education and so forth. So it'll have dramatic impact there. But besides being marginalized in that way, and maybe it'll actually then work towards further vilification of the Christians, that, you know, you'd be villainized if you still hold to that view, even though the Supreme Court has made this decision. And maybe even it's going to come down to being criminalized, that if you hold to that, that you're I remember one of the discussions that the Supreme Court had, one of the justices said that if you viewed this differently, then you were viewed as being an enemy of the human race. Now, it's one thing for a guy around the water cooler at work, you know, to just be bloviating, and he makes some sort of statement about people being the enemy of the human race. But for a Supreme Court justice of the United States to say that somebody who disagrees with 5,000 years of precedent and universal acceptance of something and holds to that same view to be an enemy of the human race is something that's in a whole other category, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was Scalia's language in the Windsor decision in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was saying was that, you know, the way the majority wrote their opinion in Windsor was to make opposition to gay marriage only attributable to animus.
Mm.
You know, you just hate gay people, and that's not in the public interest. So we're going to regard all people who support traditional marriage as enemies of the human race. And it was an interesting phrase, because for Scalia, I think, was echoing language that the ancient Romans used of the Christians.
Hmm.
And he was trying to say that he was tipping his hand where he thought this was going.
Hmm.
And so And I think that that's right. If you read Kennedy's opinion, he does portray those who oppose gay marriage as doing so only out of animus. And that's why I think it's going to be hard for him to walk back his decision, you know, as we wait for this new one to come out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's something else. There's one other exchange in there that I thought was worth bringing up. One of the justices asked, I believe he was asking the Solicitor General, but it was somebody who was arguing for gay marriage. One of the justices asked, what would happen to ministers who are licensed by the state to perform marriages who refuse to perform same-sex marriages?
Mm.
And, you know, ultimately he gave an answer, but I didn't think it was a very good answer to what the justice asked. Because if it's a constitutional right, if there's a constitutional right to gay marriage, how do you make a religious exemption for someone who doesn't recognize that as a constitutional right? The lawyer argued that, well, we have exemptions in other areas and we can make exemptions here. But at that point, what you've done is you've already said in principle the right to gay marriage trumps the right to religious liberty, and the only accommodation you're going to get is an exemption. I mean, that's a loss within itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because those will be negotiated on a state-by-state basis. Well, what about a state that doesn't want to negotiate that kind of exemption?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, even people who have said, you know, well, in the public space, you know, when you're in your church, you can do whatever you want, but when you come out of the church, you know, you have to abide by whatever the law of the land is. That has always been a facile distinction that I never thought they would make good on, because when the justice asked that question, he was asking about what happens behind the doors of the church, and this. A constitutional right to gay marriage is going to affect that eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe the people who are saying, the gay marriage proponents who are saying that they won't come after that eventually.
Sure. You brought up, you mentioned states in your comments there. That was another part of this, although our argument against gay marriage goes beyond just states' rights. But it is an aspect of it, you know, where one of the justices said, you know, why should we be telling states what they can and can't do? You know what? And he alluded to this being basically a social experiment, saying, why don't we just sit back and see how this plays out? Why do we have to rush in here and make a decision now? Let's see if there's any negative consequences of this before we move forward. Your thoughts on that?
Well, as one of the justices acknowledged, the social science on this is just not in. In terms of what are the impacts of children raised by gay parents, same-sex parents, what are the impacts of that over the long haul? And if the government's interest in regulating marriage in the first place has to do with child rearing, that's important. So, you know, not waiting on that is also jumping the gun, kind of like Roe v. Wade did. And so you have 40 plus years of culture war because the court decided the question before it was sorted out at the popular level at the states. And so this decision could lead to another long culture war over this issue. But the negative aspect of that is that in the meantime, the accommodations that might have been made for religious liberty, some of them will be ruled out if the court preemptively says it's a constitutional right. So, I mean, my hope is that Kennedy would say this is a matter for the states. He hinted that that was his view in the earlier decisions, in the Windsor decision, but we'll have to see what he does here.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we'd like even a stronger statement than that, but in light of what can happen, that would be a very good outcome as well. Let me ask you where we go from here, Denny. Assuming that the Supreme Court of the United States is going to, I think you worded it in your post here, ensconce the gay rights. How did you put it here? Let's see. The court will ensconce a constitutional right to gay marriage, assuming that that is going to take place. There's been one option that's been floated here so far is civil disobedience, and there's a group of folks that have joined together that are starting a movement about we will not give in on this issue. This will be a social disobedience issue. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it depends on what the nature of that is. I think that, you know, as Christians, our obligation is to be submissive to the state so far as we can, also be submissive to God. And if the state ever tells us to do something that God forbids or forbids us to do something that God commands, we have to obey God rather than men.
Amen.
That's what the apostles said in the book of Acts. When the authorities told them to stop preaching the gospel, they said, we're going to obey God rather than men. Because the state's not an absolute authority. So it's not ruled out that there might be a time for civil disobedience. I don't see it on the immediate horizon, but certainly it's not ruled out, especially if the government begins trying to coerce us into keeping silent about what the Bible says on sexual matters.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly which murder it was when he was confronted with either recanting or going to the stake, I believe. But he said, now I become a Christian. And those words seem to me that are going to be appropriate here in this country. We've enjoyed a lot of relative peace down through the last couple hundred years. And it seems like this is changing in a heartbeat here in this country. And it's kind of like there's a great sifting going on. Now we become a Christian. Now it won't be popular just to jump on the Christian bandwagon. It's actually going to cost you something, and cost you something quite significantly. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. And I think that we shouldn't be surprised by that, and we certainly shouldn't be alarmed by that as Christians. Jesus told us that it would be this way. He said in John 15, if they hate me, they're going to hate you too. And so we, you know, whatever kind of peace we've enjoyed up until this point, we shouldn't expect that to have been the normal state of things. The world is always at war with Christ, and depending on where you live and what historical moment, that opposition may be more or less intense, but it looks like we're moving into a period that's going to be a little more intense.
Mm-hmm. Well, Denny, thank you very much for joining us today on the broadcast. We really appreciate you taking the time to do so to talk through this important issue.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, that was Denny Burke, professor of biblical studies at Boyce College, which is the undergraduate arm of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He's also the author of What is the Meaning of Sex? Check out his website, his blog, www.dennyburke.com. That's www.dennyburke.com. You can read the article we were talking about and many others out there as well.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.